You're listening to
The Marne Report.
Hi, Fort Stewart and Hunter Armierfield. Kelsey here, back with another edition of the Marne Report podcast. Today I'm joined by our guest, Will Pendleton, Deputy Director of Garrison Safety Office, and Department of the Army Civilian Major Aaron Brandt, who is the Traffic Investigations Officer in charge. Today we're going to talk about updates to policy number 10, which relates to motorcycles, all-terrain vehicles, and recreational off-highway vehicles. Thank you guys so much for joining me. How are you?
Doing all right.
Doing well, thank you.
You've been here multiple times, Major Brandt. Thank you for coming back. And Will, is this your first time with us?
It's the first podcast I've done. Yeah, I've done a bunch of videos, but no podcasts. So.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Could you guys share a little bit about yourselves and your role?
So I'm the traffic lassie for the installation. I handle basically any type of traffic enforcement, road closures, traffic safety, also reconstruction of any vehicle accidents that occur on the installation.
Thank you.
And so I'm the deputy director for the installation Garrison Safety Office. So I handle most things safety. I'm also the installation Army Traffic Safety Training Program Manager. So I deal with all things traffic safety training. And I'm the Senior Motorcycle Safety Program Manager as well.
Thank you. Are you guys ready to get into it?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So as I said, there's been updates to this policy multiple times. But the newest one relates to kind of, as you said, like hoverboards, e-bikes, those kind of things. What are those main changes and how do they apply to our community?
So one of the big changes, not necessarily policy letter wise, but just overall, is we're seeing a surge of people using these personal mobility devices like the e-bikes and everything to commute back and forth from work, home, this and that. The problem is that this mode of transportation hasn't been out long enough for legislation to catch up to it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it falls under, like the e-bikes and everything, they're treated just like bicycles. So you have certain rules that are applied to bicycles, i.e. when you're traveling down the road, you must remain as far to the right-hand side as you can. You have to obey all traffic control devices just like a vehicle if you're on the roadway, i.e. stop signs, yield signs, traffic lights. There are hand and arm signals that you're supposed to give if you're turning. You're also supposed to have a headlight on the front of the bike as well as a red reflector on the rear of the bike. Now, there are certain things that we added to the policy letter that went a little bit above what the state requires.
Mm-hmm.
Major Brandt said, one of the key things is targeting the safety of those personnel that don't necessarily have a standard automobile or motorcycle getting back and forth to work. And he, like he said, we're seeing an uptick in people using those. And while it's a fantastic idea, we want to save gas and financial struggles with all the changing of the environment fiscally. And we also have to make sure that they understand that we're trying to protect them in these type of environments. And so as the motorcycle guy who's been riding for 40 years, I understand the difficulties just being on a motorcycle as far as safety goes. So when we look at these smaller devices that people are traveling on, there's much less safety space around them to deal with. So because the state law lacks in safety awareness towards these vehicles, we want to implement some more things to help keep these personnel safe. Stand-up scooters, skateboards, motorized skateboards or non-motorized skateboards, bicycles that have add-on powering devices, Segway-style things, one-ways, and then, like you just mentioned, the hoverboards. If it is a two-wheeled bicycle, whether it has an engine or not, you have to follow the same standard laws that the state applies. And then the addition is the red taillight instead of the reflector has to be seen from 300 feet from behind. The headlight has to be able to be seen from 300 feet behind in front and illuminate the entire area. So it's not just the safety for the people that are driving around you, but also you need to be able to see
yourself.
And,
yeah.
Right. And some of these soldiers, you know, they're trying to ride these to work during PT hours. And during the winter time, what do we have at PT? It's all dark.
Mm-hmm.
This morning, I noticed a young soldier on a hoverboard that was actually going faster than traffic down Gulick Avenue. So we have to understand that that's a no-go.
Like in the street?
In the street, on Gulick Avenue, in and out of cars. So the understanding there is that we know you're trying to get back and forth to work as quickly as possible, but you have nothing illuminating you, you're not really protected by anything, and at any moment, you can be hit by a car.
And I'm guessing, would those vehicles have to use the sidewalk? Are they designated in the street? Like, what is the expanded role in that?
So the state law is fairly gray on what you're allowed to operate on the sidewalk. So as far as the cantonment area of Fort Stewart, anything that is not a bicycle, motorized or not, needs to be on the troop walk, on the sidewalk. They cannot be on the main, what we may or may not call a public road, where the main modes of transportation are. You know, we have a troop walk that runs basically from one side of cantonment to another.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfect roadway, basically, for you to travel on these electronic devices. At night, you need to have something illuminating you when operating them, and then you also need to be required to wear some sort of ANSI, ANSI protective bicycle helmet, or ACH kickbox, the old school kickbox, whatever you get issued by the Army. Those are perfectly capable of well as protecting your head in case you do hit something that you don't see.
Can you guys share a little bit about the purpose of these updates?
Mainly the purpose of the updates, not only with the changing of command as far as signature blocks on these letters, but also to stay up to date on the technology that is out there, and also the current trends of motorized transportation. Mm-hmm. We've had several incidents of e-bikes running into a vehicle that was turning left because they didn't have the proper lighting equipment on the bicycle.
Yeah.
Can't yield to something you can't see. So if a vehicle is turning, say left, and you're coming straight with a bicycle that is not illuminated, they can't see you. It's the same thing if a vehicle was traveling down the road without headlights. You know, they are going to share some contributing factors to that accident.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly the same thing. So you think about one of the highest risk-taking efforts you can do on a motorcycle, when you're operating a motorcycle, is somebody making a left in front of you because they don't see you. So if they don't see a motorcycle that's large and well illuminated, they're really not going to be able to see someone on a very, very small vehicle with no lighting whatsoever.
And probably they're not wearing anything reflective or right. Anything that really just kind of reflects that light back right. Too.
And retroreflective material doesn't just work well at night. It works very, very well in the daytime too.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just think about how many times the sun has reflected off a windshield and just lit you up.
Blind you.
Right, exactly. So the same thing works. And for basically anybody, runners, skateboarders, bicyclists, motorcyclists, anybody that's doing something it's not really inside of a vehicle, retroreflective material that reflects light works in all hours of the day and night.
That's a good idea, yeah. So I'm guessing these changes are already in effect, or the updates, they're already being applied?
They go in effect once the letter signed officially. And I believe the letter for this one was signed July of 2025. Main reason, like I said, for the podcast is to get the education out there.
Yeah.
We all want voluntary compliance to these safety measures. But unfortunately, if the voluntary compliance doesn't come, people on these devices can be cited. I mean, mm-hmm. they are technically breaking OCGA, which is Georgia traffic law. Or if it is a letter specific and they are military, then it falls under Article 92 for failure to obey a general order.
So, you know, the this is an installation level policy letter, so it does just apply to soldiers with 3ID. It applies to anybody living and or working on Fort Stewart. This is spouses, retirees.
Anybody coming on here, yeah.
But anybody that comes within the gates of the confines of the cantonment area at Fort Stewart. But on top of that, we have to understand that our gate guards, they are installation access control. Their main purpose is to control installation access on and off the installation. They don't have the time nor the training most of the time to stop these people from coming in the gates. So it's up to the command teams, it's up to the soldiers, it's up to my office, the Garrison Safety Office, is up to DES, MPs to enforce it further. So just understand that because you made it past the gate doesn't mean that it was okay for you to operate on the installation.
If people don't start complying after hearing this message or more awareness, what are you guys planning to do next?
So the Garrison Safety Office, we are advisors. We are advisors to the commanding general and to the garrison commander. So we cannot punish. We implement change. We look at the risk levels. We look at how often something happens. And we advise the CG and the garrison commander on what steps can be taken to improve safety. It is 100% up to the command teams of the soldiers to provide the restrictions or the punishment.
Anything you want to add? Or?
On the flip side, just like vehicles get cited for breaking speed laws, failure to stop at stop signs, bicycles can be cited for the same thing. These are monetary tickets. Last thing we want to do is start having to issue out monetary tickets, but if voluntary compliance is not there, then we're kind of, you know, hands are tied on that.
Is there anything else you guys would like to share before we go?
Just be safe.
Yeah, you know, these things, a lot of times they seem cumbersome. They seem restrictive. They seem to be sometimes
annoying.
I hear people say annoying or stripping my freedoms. But there needs to be an understanding that ultimately the senior commander is responsible for everyone's safety on this installation. And sometimes that comes with some restrictions that people might not enjoy. And also understanding that the people that are implementing these policies, that are writing these policies, are not people that are unaware of the type of activities. You know, we've all done things that we probably shouldn't have at some point in time on bicycles and otherwise. And then, you know, I'm a motorcycle operator writing the motorcycle policy. So it's we do the best we can to implement policy with people who have the knowledge and the common sense not to just add painful, unnecessary things. Yeah. So, you know, again, at any point in time, if anybody has any questions about policy letter 10, it is owned by the Garrison Safety Office. And I can provide insight in any way, shape, or form. And if I don't have the answer when they call me, I guarantee you that I'll find it and ensure that anybody calls me back will have it.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so I know I learned a lot, and I hope everyone else did too. To stay up to date on Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield, please follow us on social media, check out the Fort Stewart website, and download MAPPA. Thank you, Major Bryant and Will, for joining me. It's been a pleasure. I'm Kelsey Stieber, and that concludes this episode of the Martin Report. See you next week.
U.S. Army is enhancing security at Fort Stewart and Hunter Army Airfield with the automated installation entry system, bringing smarter, faster, and safer access to our gates.
Using advanced handheld devices, our security personnel can now verify identities in real time, even when the visitor control center is closed. These devices tap into national law enforcement databases, checking federal and state records, DMV status, and more, all in about 45 seconds. Each gate is equipped with one handheld vetting device. If no issues are found, visitors may receive up to 180-day access to the installation. This works for family, rideshare services, food delivery, and MWR activities. If derogatory information is flagged, access will be denied and the visitor will be directed to the Visitor Control Center for further guidance.
Your safety is our mission. With AIE in-lane vetting, we're keeping our community secure day and night.